Test, test. Hey, good evening everyone. I'm using yet a different mic tonight, so hopefully the sound is okay. Let me know if there's any problems with the sound. I'm also broadcasting audio to our old server, so let me just give that to the people who might be tuning in. And hopefully that works better. All right. So tonight I thought I'd talk, as I mentioned on Sunday, about religion. It's kind of, I think it's potentially overlooked the importance that religion plays in the world. I think, and again, I don't really know because I live a somewhat sheltered life, but I think that this concept of differentiation. There have been three sort of views put forward about the future of religion. The first one is that I can't remember what the first one is. The privatization, that religion is just going to become more and more a part of our private life, and that over time, especially in the global society, people are going to stop expressing religion publicly. The second is that religion's going to decrease. It'll be replaced by science. It'll be replaced by secular humanism, and so on. But the third hypothesis or prediction is that religion has begun to, or will begin to be differentiated from secular society. So we'll begin to start to draw distinct boundaries between what we consider religious and what we consider secular. And the last one is sort of agreed upon to be actually happening. That's what we're seeing. We're not seeing a reduction in religious activity. We're not seeing a privatization or the internalization of religion. What we're instead seeing is religion is being put in its place and being given its own realm of importance. But I think to some extent this tendency is to blame for a reduced appreciation of the importance that religion plays in our lives. We tend to think of religion as separate, something you do in church or in a monastery. But there are many there are a couple of reasons why this is wrong. Why I think this is wrong. The first reason is that the explicit religion, that's religion that we call religion, that we call Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism, you know, it seeps over into our daily life. Buddhists carry around images of the Buddha, or they have Dhamma wheels on their in their car. Christians, of course, wear crosses around their necks. And so we're constantly reminded of these things. Jews are always thinking about the fact, always conscious of the fact that they are Jewish, different in some way from non-Jews, just as a way, the way they live their lives and how they eat and so on. Muslims pray 5 times a day, the devout ones anyway. Or they wear headscarves or so on. But the other reason why I think this differentiation concept is, it's only in our minds. I mean, it's not that it's real. It really is happening. We are trying to, I think, as a global society, trying to be able to find a way to separate religion. But the other problem with this idea is the concept of implicit religion. That a lot of what we don't call religious is in no way different, in no meaningful way different from what we do call religious. And so I think this is sort of the reason why, if we do, why we think, why we underestimate the importance of religion. Because what we call religion or the truth, the reality behind the things that we call religion, that reality is a fundamental part of our lives. I mean, there are scholars who say that it's a fundamental part of humanity. We're just learning some of the interesting things I'm learning at university about these scholars who, I think Eliade is the latest one we're looking at, who says, you know, religion is a part of what it means to be human, which is, I think, foreign to us in modern times. We tend to think of religion as man-made. I mean, we follow, that's, I think, Karl Marx was the one who said. That person over there has their mic on. Could you please turn off your voice? I think I can mute you. Did I just mute you? No. Please turn off your voice. Cav Harper, your voice is on. To turn it off. Can someone help them to do that? Send them a private message or something? Otherwise you're going to be disturbed. So that, I mean, that, I think that's my argument in brief for why religion is important. It's just an essential part of our lives. But more than just being important, religion, I think, is quite dangerous. And what I think is most dangerous, or something that's quite dangerous, is our lack of understanding of this idea of religion. We don't understand what religion is, and this is why we're able to differentiate it, why we don't recognize religious behavior where it actually exists. And so this is sort of the kinds of things that I'm looking at in my study. I mean, again, this is all intellectual study, so I apologize if this sounds... I'll try to make it here, and I'll try to get around to why this is, I think, important from a practical point of view. This isn't just theoretical. So the problem is that we mix concepts. And so our concept of religion ends up being a hodgepodge of concepts, of very different things. Figured it out just before I ejected him. Oh, well, he can come back. I think. Hopefully. Oops. Right, so that's religious behavior on my part. Thinking about the importance of maintaining quiet. So, sum it up. I'm not going to go into great detail. I'm not going to take too much time because I want to get on to the more practical aspects. But religion is what you take seriously. Religion is what you ascribe importance to. That which is important to you. Anything that's important to you. I mean, that much I think we generally understand about religion. The problem is that aspect of our nature, to take things seriously, to ascribe meaning to things, to think of them as important, to adhere to them. I mean, that we know this part of ourselves, we know that this exists, and that is generally fundamental to our concept of what religion is. The problem is then we add all sorts of other things. We talk about belief as being religious, and we talk about practices, rituals. A ritual is religious, but the thing is they're not intrinsically religious for any reason. I mean, there's no difference between belief in God and belief in the Big Bang, for example. Not from what we might say an anthropological point of view, but also not from an experiential point of view, which is important for a Buddhist. So this is, I've talked before about the idea of Buddhist religion. And by that I don't mean Buddhism as a religion. I mean the concept of religion from the point of view of a Buddhist. This is important because there's no such thing as Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism. These are not realities. That's important to realize. There are certain beliefs, and the Buddha was clear about this. He, when asked about other quote-unquote religions, he said, if what they say is true, I agree with them. Those things which they say are, they teach, if they are true, I agree with them. But those things that they teach that are not true, I disagree with them. I mean, it's a simple thing to say, but the point being that the Buddha didn't denounce a religion because it's not something that exists. It's a ridiculous idea to say Christianity is good or Christianity is bad because this thing doesn't exist. Islam is evil. It's just a meaningless concept, meaningless statement. But we fall into this. We turn these things into entities, as we do with so many other things. We turn them into billiard balls. Atomic. The word atomic is an interesting word that I often use that I don't think everyone understands. But the word atomic, an atom, is something that's indivisible, because they thought atoms were indivisible. So this word means... like our problems, when we say I have a problem with depression, as soon as we label it depression, we turn it into an atom, something that is indivisible. But as Buddhist meditators, we know very well that things like depression are divisible, quite divisible. They're divisible into moments of thought and reaction and feeling. And religions too, of course, are what we call Christianity, let's say, is made up of certain beliefs, certain practices, and these beliefs and practices are different for different people and different groups, and held with different levels of importance, you see. So for some people, they might believe in God, but even that belief might not have any importance to them. I think a lot of Jewish people believe in God, but nominally. So that belief isn't important to them. They don't go about their life praying to God or even worrying about what God thinks of them. It's just, well, that's just who I am, and yeah, God created the earth, and so on and so on. Doesn't really mean much. It's not like Christianity, where belief in God is very important, and moreover, belief in a certain God and a son of God and so on. And if you don't believe in these things, you're going to go to hell, so it's quite an important belief. Relative to Judaism, it's a much more important belief, so it's much more religious, you see. I think this is an important sort of framework to work with. A belief and a practice, beliefs and practices are not intrinsically religious. A person performing a ritual, so I'm talking about this with my arguing this, or you know, presenting this to my professor and my teacher, my TA. A person who, what's a good ritual? A person who I don't know, let's say a Buddhist ritual, who bows to the Buddha every day. Let's say kids. Kids, every morning their parents tell them to bow to the Buddha before they go to school. Right? And then we compare that ritual to a person who drinks coffee every morning as a ritual. Right? Or maybe coffee's a bad one. Who... We were talking about this, so I said drinks coffee out of a certain mug, right? So they have a certain mug that they drink coffee out of. Let's say it's a big mug, and then that mug breaks one day. Well, for some people that might be a real disruption in their ritual, and so it actually might be disappointing to them, because that mug was an important part of their ritual. Maybe there was something about the mug. It was a big mug, or it was maybe it was one of those stainless steel mugs that is vacuum walled, and now they have to use a ceramic one. Or maybe it was ceramic and now they have to use a stainless steel one, and anyway, it bothers them. So you might start to say, well, that was kind of a religious thing, or that ritual had some religious significance in that it took on an importance to the person in its specific form. Whereas the kid who bows to the Buddha every morning might not be very religious about it at all. I'm just doing this because my parents tell me to. I met a man who wore a turban, and so I talked to him about being Sikh, and I said, you know, Sikhism seems like an interesting religion, and he was sort of unimpressed by the things I was saying. And then I said, do you have the dagger? And he said, I'm not a real Sikh. I said, well, why do you wear the turban? And he said, well, my parents make me wear it. And he said, they're not real Sikhs either. They don't do everything they're supposed to do, but I just do it for them, you know. You see, so it's a quite a different way of looking at religion than most people do. But it's an important distinction, because the way most people look at religion is sometimes quite disappointing. And I found out last night that even the way some religious studies scholars look at religion is quite disappointing. In the following way, ordinary people, you'll often hear them say, all religions teach people to be good people, right? In fact, you even have the Dalai Lama saying these sorts of things. Actually, I'm not sure exactly what he says, but it's getting along those lines. I don't know. Maybe he's okay, but there are people who explicitly state that all religions teach people to be good people. This is becoming a questioned statement, but I think a lot of people even forgive religious violence by saying, well, not forgive, sorry, forgive religions on account of which, or those religions that, when religions are cited as a cause of violence, a reason for becoming violent. So Islam is the new one, but Christianity, of course, in history, Judaism as well. Even Buddhism may have its history, and there's some weird stuff going on in Burma and some stuff in Sri Lanka that had highly Buddhist undertones, or there was some suggestion that in order to protect Buddhism, they had to kill people, that kind of thing. Or Buddhism was being threatened. Anyway, I don't know. Maybe that's not even going far enough. But you would use a religion to support your violent tendencies, or support evil, basically. So then they apologize for these religions, or they make excuses for the religions by saying, that's not religion. That's not that religion, because all religions are good, right? So when religions do evil, you say, well, that can't be that religion because religions don't do evil. I don't know what kind of fallacy that is. It's the no true Scotsman fallacy, or maybe it's circular reasoning of some sort. When presented with something that disproves your thesis, you say, well, that's not possible because of my thesis. I say religions can't do evil. Well, what about this religion doing? What about this? There's people, you know, doing evil in the name of that religion. Well, that's impossible because religions can't do evil, right? It's not very solid reasoning. But there's this idea, because we turn religions into an atomic thing, and then we apply certain characteristics to them arbitrarily, really, because there's no reason to think. And this is what I find very difficult to get across to people, is there's no reason to think that a religion can't be responsible for evil. And there's no reason for that. But you see, when you don't understand what you're talking about, you know, if you don't have a definition of what religion is, which we usually don't, besides this atomic thing, I said this to my stepmother, and she said, well, when I use the word religion, I mean a religion, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism. Which, of course, is not useful to us because it doesn't exist. And so this framework, having a clear framework, and it's, if you haven't spelled it out, for me it's this trinity, right? The holy trinity of religion, science, and culture. So religion I've defined as that which we take seriously. Science and culture are different in the sense that they can both be religious. So they're a different sort of thing. But they don't have to be. Science is that which we believe, because scientists only have beliefs. From Buddhism point of view, doesn't matter whether what you believe is true or not. A belief is still a belief. I mean, in terms of defining it. A belief isn't categorically different just because it's true. I mean, it's important. There's an important difference, but it's extrinsic. Belief is still belief, true or false. And the same with practice. Religious practice isn't different from ordinary practice. The practice is still the same. What's different is how seriously you take it, and the consequences, of course. Although even that, yeah, that's a bit complicated, because practice is physical, there's physical practice, and there's mental practice. So belief and practice, I mean, these are often cited as religious things, but they're only religious if you take them seriously. There's no other way to look at it. I mean, there's no other distinction, otherwise everything that you believe has to be religion. But it's not, clearly. Well, I mean, these are just words, right? But there is a difference when we take something seriously. And so why that distinction in particular is important is because, of course, that's what's going to affect our behavior. And by keeping it broad like that, you can clearly see, obviously, clearly, if you were to for some reason ascribe to my definition here, clearly some religion is inherently evil. Right? Because it's so broad. Anything, if you take seriously, or if you ascribe some importance to doing evil deeds. Even, I mean, let's say my children are starving. It's important. I've got to, you might say, that use these words, I've got to steal for them. When my kids are, when your kids are, I don't know, it gets a little bit complicated. Let's say instead, you would do anything for your kids, and therefore your kids are important. And the fact that your family and your relationship with your children is important, that's a part of your religion. You take that seriously, or it means something to you. You adhere to that. And so then we can start to pick apart. I mean, what this does, hopefully, is strip away some of the confusion and, I think, purposeful obfuscation of religion, where we make religion out to be a purposefully mysterious thing, so that we can hide behind it. I mean, not we, but so I think people hide behind this idea of religion and the idea that a religion is good and so on to hold it up as a flag, and I mean in the most egregious form, use it for their personal benefit, right? Or use it to mask their evil deeds. So a priest abusing young children, a pastor or a religious leader extorting or embezzling funds from ordinary individuals. I mean, religion is, and I'm not just talking about, you know, even Buddhism is in many cases a scam. You know, it's a money-making scheme and nothing else. And so what I'm trying to get at here is back to the ultimate reality, to tear down this concept of a religion and see what's really going on. In general, we have beliefs and we have practices. And any belief or any practice becomes religious when it starts to take on importance. So usually it's distinguished by an unreasonable amount of importance, or the importance is the only thing that's sustaining the belief. So belief in God, the importance or the level of passion you have for that belief is often the only thing sustaining it, because there's no evidence for it, right? If you have, like, there's these Pentecostal Christians in the U.S. who used to, I don't think they do anymore, but some of them used to handle snakes. And so we watch this documentary where they handle these venomous snakes. And it's based on a scripture where Jesus or somebody said, anybody who believes in God, in Jesus, the true believer, will not be bitten by a snake, will not be bitten by poisonous snakes. They can drink poison and they won't die. And so they actually did. They would drink arsenic, I think. They would do all these things to I don't know why, to show, to give them faith, to show the truth of the teachings. And so the documentary we watched, this pastor actually, or this leader guy, actually got bitten by the poisonous snake, and he did die. But our professor was saying that it didn't actually diminish people's faith. And this is the where religion comes into play, most obviously, and most unfortunately, because it allows you to hold a belief that is not true, that has no basis in fact or evidence. Why do you believe it? You believe it because you want to believe it, because it's important to you, right? I mean, important isn't even the best word. It's you cling to the belief, I guess. So from a Buddhist point of view, we might say that which is clung to, that is religion. Or that which is adhered to make it a little more neutral. Because Buddhists have religion, right? Even good, there's good religion. And this is where this question always comes up, well, isn't meditation a clinging? And my answer, of course, is no. Well, not of course. My answer, I think, is no. Even though Ananda said, yes, it's kind of a clinging, but his language is kind of vague, and it doesn't really translate well, but not everything we do, not everything we adhere to is out of craving, but we still adhere to it. So if a person is wise, take an arahant, of course, our extreme example, someone who's already enlightened, they adhere to a great many things. They never kill or steal, lie, cheat, they never get angry, they never have greed. But that's because of wisdom. They do they meditate a lot. You know, an arahant would tend to meditate regularly. And it's based on wisdom. It's not based on a craving. It's not that they want to meditate or that they hope to get anything. But it's based on a deep understanding of sort of the right way to live or the right things to do. But meditators as well. A meditator doesn't have to have craving. You don't want meditation. You don't cling to meditation. Or you do kind of cling, but it's not necessarily in a bad way. You adhere to it out of a provisional wisdom that this is good for you. You know, you don't yet know for certain how good it is for you. But you have a sense, either from intellectual reasoning or from the whatever little amount of experience you have already from the religion, from the meditation. It's not craving that makes you adhere to it. So craving is not, clinging is not the only reason for calling something religious. Because people adhere to all sorts of things, like a person might adhere to a diet. And this is where this idea came from, is because we use the word religion in that way. We say, not very often, but you'll sometimes hear people say, this person diets religiously. This person exercises religiously. And that's, so we use the word in this way. It's just, time and again, it's amazing how every person who studies the word religion adds something. So it has to have something to do with fundamental questions about reality, right? We want to make religion something special, something distinct, because, you know, we've somehow come up with this axiom that it has to be distinct. It's distinct because it has to be distinct. It's again circular reasoning. There's no reason to think that any aspect of our beliefs or practice has to be distinct from other forms of belief and practice. Our belief in the existence of Australia should not be seen as categorically different from our belief in God. Now, qualitatively, it's different. I mean, the belief in God is, there's very little evidence for the existence of God. Besides, as no, there really isn't. But there's much evidence for the existence of Australia. Nonetheless, there's still just two beliefs. But some people want to say, ah, yes, but God is mysterious, so religion has something to do with what is mysterious. There's no reason to think that. I mean, it's interesting to look at why we come up with these wacky beliefs and why we cling to them. That's quite interesting. That's important from a Buddhist point of view, to some extent. Although we'd still want to reduce it. We're quite reductionist, is the word. To say, well, these people are, well, they're messed up and they have all sorts of craving and all sorts of delusions and this mishmash of mental states is creating these beliefs. Greed is often a creator of belief because someone is manipulating someone else or a group of people, so this is how cults arise. And this could be how any of the religions arise. We don't really know. Jesus could have been a charlatan, some guy who just tricked everyone into believing that he was the Messiah. Muhammad could have done the same, and we don't know. Moses could have done the same. He went up on the mountain, came down with these laws, and said, yeah, God gave them to me. But he could have just been scamming them. He could have been a scam artist. We see this throughout history. How do we know any one of these guys wasn't? That's often how religion arises. So from a Buddhist point of view, it's not that mysterious. So it's often just somebody comes up and says, you know, oh, I talk to God. Or someone starts saying, oh, you have to let me perform this ritual and the rain will come. And then people start to believe and then the rain comes, and due to their what is called confirmation bias, we're biased towards believing things, interestingly enough. I think that's quite interesting from a Buddhist point of view. But they have this this theory that they've sort of tested, that we tend to believe things rather than disbelieve. Disbelief is more difficult for us. Interesting, no? And the theory goes that in the times when we would have been prey, when you have to worry about danger, if there's a danger, if you hear a rustling in the grass, right? You're in this savanna in Africa and you hear a rustling. And some grass is like 10 feet tall. I remember walking through grass that was at least 8 feet tall in northern Ontario. It's the kind of grass that you don't want to meet a bear in. Couldn't see it coming. So you hear this rustling in the grass. Well, evolutionarily, for our own benefit, it's to our benefit to run, to believe that there's something there. And so this is a sort of a theory as to why we believe things. Anyway, it seems to be true that we tend to believe things. We all want to believe in God, right? Or we all get a sense that, or maybe it's just growing up in a Judeo-Christian world, I've always felt the pull of believing in God. Yeah, it seems reasonable. It's hard to shake that belief. The belief that there are monsters under the bed. The belief that your teddy bear is real, has a consciousness. To actually break from belief is not an easy thing. That's really a good point, I think. That's something the Buddha talked about quite often. You know, wrong view, which is basically wrong belief. Any belief. And he talked about it. He dropped the word wrong often. He would just say beliefs. Beliefs are a problem. Give up your beliefs. It's a difficult thing to do. I mean, it's more difficult than believing. So we're inclined to adhere to belief, we're inclined to make much of belief, we're inclined to protect our beliefs. Scientists do the same thing. Scientists will cling to their beliefs. Most discoveries in science, in history as we know it, have been met with severe criticism from scientists, derision, outright anger and vilification from scientists. Einstein derided quantum physics. Einstein, the guy. He said, God doesn't play dice. And what he meant is, there's nothing random in the universe, and that's what quantum physics sort of is showing. That there was any, there couldn't be an intrinsic uncertainty. Or quantum physics was showing there is an intrinsic uncertainty. But the whole idea of uncertainty was impossible to Einstein, although it appears to be true, appears to be real. That's just one example. Einstein himself, his theories were, I don't know how they were, but we've got what Galileo was threatened with death or something. Anyway, so a little bit about religion. That it is to some extent important that we look at the concept of religion and try and understand it, because it's a big part of our lives, and hopefully that kind of investigation or examination helps us understand religious activity. And realize that there's something really going on here. There's something real going on that goes across religions. And that kind of clarity of seeing what's going on underneath, what's really going on behind these words like Christianity, Judaism, words or names for religion, what's really going on. The clarity will allow us to break out of this idea that all religions are the same. The idea that a religion itself exists, because it's ridiculous. It's even the wrong thing. It's the wrong kind of thing to say that all religions are the same, because none of them exist. And what you'd have to say is all behavior is the same, because that's what's really going on. Including the creation of religions. The creation of a religion in your mind is a certain type of activity. It's very religious. Some people cling to this idea that a religion, that concepts exist. Cling to the idea of Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism. The same way we cling to nations. Nationalism is a very religious activity. When the nation is important to us, that's a very religious thing. You see how useful this is? It's not the kind of language the Buddha used, but I think it's sort of a bridge between the way we talk about things now and the way the Buddha talked about things. So you see, we can go even deeper and just talk about things from a point of view of the Buddha's teaching, but I think there's a bridge to be made so that we can start to see that behind all this talk of religion and belief and God and so on, there's some very real phenomena that we can talk about and that can help us dispel all this confusion around religion and help us do away with the purposeful masking of unwholesomeness, So it doesn't matter whether a suicide bomber is truly Muslim or not, right? There's a question of whether certain beliefs are wrong. You don't need to talk about whether it's a Muslim belief or not a Muslim belief, because that doesn't exist. It simplifies that sort of argument greatly, right? if a Buddhist kills someone and a Muslim kills someone, it's wrong either way. If there's any book that says that killing is good, well, that book is wrong. Doesn't matter whether we interpret books in a certain way, because books are not the point. Doesn't matter whether the Quran says this or doesn't say this. As the Quran doesn't mean anything, it's a book. It isn't the book of Islam, because Islam doesn't exist. And so on. We can do this for religions and break them down and see what's really going on. It helps us, and hopefully helps people in the various religions, if they were ever to think about these sorts of things, helps them to see what's really going on, and helps them to sort of clarify for themselves what's important, because I think then we'd be able to pull away from bad teachings. We'd be able to put aside any teaching that's bad and say, no, look, that's not what's important to me. What's important to me is goodness. Right? Like, as a Buddhist, I might have to toe the party line and say, teaching X is good because it's Buddhist, right? But there's no such thing. A teaching can't be good because it's Buddhist. It has to be good because it's good, you see. A Muslim might do the same. A Muslim might have to say, well, the Quran, if the Quran actually does say that beating your wife is good, then I don't believe in that teaching. That teaching in the Quran is wrong. You can do that because you're no longer subscribing to this concept of Islam. And so on. So, some insights. Hopefully that doesn't sound too far out. Hopefully you can see the benefit of this sort of discussion. I think it's very sort of the things you do find these sorts of thoughts in the Tipitaka. Ways of looking at things, of tearing things down and looking at what's really going on. So, that's the Dhamma for tonight. Does anyone have any questions? Did Kay ever come back? I've got powers to kick people on this sim. They gave me powers a long time ago, and I've abused them, I think. You're not really supposed to kick people unless something really bad happens, but I thought they were away. I thought they were... Let's see if I can find them again. No, I don't think they're banned. They should. But if you kick someone, they might not be allowed to come right back. Okay. Well, maybe we'll call it a night. And have a good night, everyone. And probably see you back here tomorrow.